Tom, how do you kiss underwater without bubbles coming out of your nose and mouth?
What you're hearing is the voice of Leta Powell Drake in a 1984 interview with Tom Hanks. Drake is a member of the Nebraska Broadcasters Association Hall of Fame and, more recently, a viral Twitter sensation.
Let me ask you, how would you feel as a mother if your daughter were involved with your former love?
Drake spent 20 years at the CBS affiliate in Lincoln, producing the morning show and doing junket interviews with A-listers, a compilation of Drake's interviews in which she baffles guests like Hanks, Tim Curry, and Lee Remick with her blunt questioning, has tens of thousands of likes and retweets, leading the internet to name her the greatest interviewer of all time.
You don't consider yourself a great actor, do you?
Well, hi, Leta. I'm really excited to talk to you. How are you today?
Well, all things considered, very good.
Good. I'm glad to hear that.
I just got off an Ollie. See, I do a television show here in Lincoln. So we had our meeting, and I was so happy to be able to use the Zoom today so that I could participate. Before, I'd have to go down to the studio at Five City Television, and I'd be the only one, you know, because everybody else had some help. I live alone, and nobody's here to help me, you know, learn all the new technology. So I finally got it today. Yay, I'm not dead yet. But anyway, okay, and I got my start in radio. This was in Duluth, Minnesota, when I was going to college, and we started the first radio show that they ever had. And so I was one of the announcers, and I helped set it up. And, you know, and that began my interest, you know, in radio. And then, of course, I'm kind of a busybody. I went to the television station. Now, this is like 1955 or 56. The television station, KDAL Television in Duluth, Minnesota, was now open. This was television, brand new television. Was a big deal. And so I got to be on the air as a model for the master furriers for the furrier shop, and I would because everything's live, remember, and nobody knows what they're doing. So I'd model, you know, and I would help, and then there was a live children's show, so I got to hand out the prizes. That was a big deal, you know, for everybody, you know. And so but the thing is, I was learning on the job. So you know, I finally got a position there. And I helped, you know, to put the programs on the air. And then when I graduated from the University of Minnesota and got an offer to come, my favorite professor, I was majoring in theater, and he was my favorite teacher. And he said, I'm going to Nebraska, to the University of Nebraska. Would you like to come along? I'll give you a scholarship, and you can be the costume designer. And I thought, Nebraska? Where in the heck is that? Well, I'll go there, you know, for a couple of years, get my master's degree, and then I'll be off to Broadway. Well, you know what happens over the course of time. I love Nebraska, and I got very involved, you know, very involved. And at the Johnny Carson School of Theater and Film, it wasn't called that at that time. It was just called the University Theater, and it was the second oldest building on the campus. You know, it's an old, big old building, but beautifully designed. You know, it was like built in 1894. And so it was, you know, beginning to show its age. And then guess who stepped in many years later? Johnny Carson. Now, see, Johnny had gone to school there. Now, he went, of course, you know, many years before I did. But once he got to be famous, you know, and he loved the Temple Building right there, right here in Lincoln. And he gave us, are you ready for this, $44 million.
Wow.
To upgrade the building, and also for students to get, students could go to Europe. It would be all picked up, and, you know, and they could study the theater in Europe and so forth. And so, I mean, it's just been wonderful. So, you know, here I am working. I'm the fashion coordinator and being in every single play that was on. Well, then I got a husband and I got a baby. And you know what happens with that? I kind of was like a housewife for a little bit, and I didn't like that at all. Mm-hmm. And then I got rid of my husband and so went back to work. So I started to work at first at the radio station in Lincoln. And then then I went to Nebraska Public Television and programmed the television network and did all of the asks for money. You know, I was on there all the time. And so then once I got really old, and they got all new management and so forth, so I then wound up with OLLI, the Osher Lifelong Learning Institute. Now, I don't know if you know what that is. It's in Omaha also, too.
I'm vaguely aware of it.
Well, Mr. Osher was, yeah, I think he's still alive, a gazillionaire. And he thought it was very important that people who are age 50 and older can continue to learn. So he offered to colleges and universities all across the United States $70 million each if they would set up a program for seniors. And, you know, we offered classes in whatever we were interested in. So I began to create classes, and so I took the arts, the Metropolitan Opera, the Johnny Carson School of Theater and Film, anything that I was, you know, the Tractor Museum, anything that I liked, I would create a class about that. And so we grew to 1,700 members right here in Lincoln. Now we've dropped off, of course, because a lot of the seniors don't understand Zoom and all this stuff. You know, we don't have the in-person classes anymore. We're just kind of waiting for the pandemic to go away so we can get back to some semblance of normalcy. But they're hurting right now, too. And I'm still involved with that, with these classes. So now I can take the classes, you know, that I want to see. So it's been very full. I'm just waiting for the coronavirus to disappear.
Yeah, yes.
It's made a difference. But I love and I listen to public radio all the time, and Nebraska Public Radio. That's what I have on all day.
Good.
And at night I watch Nebraska Public Television because I cannot tolerate all of the commercials and the crap that is on, you know. So I love radio, and that's where I got my start, you know.
Well, Lita, I would like to talk about your broadcasting career. First of all, can I ask how you found out you had gone viral on Twitter?
Just really by accident. I had no idea, you know, that this was happening. Now, just the background, how this happened is, when I worked for Channels 1011 in Lincoln, I hosted the morning show, which an hour, 7 o'clock in the morning, and then I had the children's show in the afternoon, which is Calamity Kate. I was Calamity Kate, the West's only lady sheriff. So I had two live television shows a day that I hosted and produced. And so during all this time, as time wore on, and I was there almost 20 years at Channels 10, 11, that those people who had television shows were invited all over the country to New York, Chicago, L.A., to interview the people who, you know, the people who were on, who were the stars on CBS television. And so we would go there for a weekend, you know, 3 to 4 days. We'd fly all over the country, and then I felt so sorry for some of the stars, because we'd start about 9 o'clock in the morning. They interviewed all day long. I mean, we interviewed all day long. So I would come out with 5 or 6 or 7 videos. Now it's on 3/4-inch videotape, and I would come home with those and put them on my morning show. And I did that for several years, and I had about 350 videotapes. You know, and they were fun. They were good. I mean, I thought they were pretty darn good. I thought, what am I going to do with these things? Who wants this stuff? I had so many that the guys from the station brought the truck out, and I put them in my closet, and it almost filled up the closet. And, you know, the years went by, and I thought, what am I going to do? I shouldn't just throw these things away. I mean, there's some real value here. And so I donated them to the Nebraska History Museum. Right here in Lincoln. Oh, I love those people. I love those people. And the guy in charge, now his name is, and he should be recognized for this, Paul Eisenagel. He digitized them, and he put them on YouTube. And once they got on YouTube, somebody from a foreign country picked it up and started this whole thing rolling. And there have been over 8.4 million people who have liked the stuff. And I have been so overwhelmed, and I was afraid my computer was going to explode.
Yeah.
You know, I even got somebody from South America. I said, what the heck does somebody in South America care about some of the folks in, you know, in Lincoln, Nebraska and mm-hmm. some of the stars? But obviously they did.
How lucky it is that you didn't throw out those tapes, because...
Oh, I know now, you know. And the thing is, other people who did the same thing I did, I'm sure that they got rid of their tape. Nobody mm-hmm. did this. Nobody did it, except me. I guess I'd be called a hoarder. I keep stuff. Oh, you know, I mean, I got so much stuff, and really some of it's very valuable. But I did do it with regards to the library, since I loved them. I had so many library books, and I realized as my eyesight began to go away, Lita, you're never going to read these things again. See, I usually only chose the Pulitzer Prize-winning books, and I like the ancient books, you know, the antique kind of books. I then loaded up all of the books that, you know, that I had already read and realized I would never read them again, and they're in beautiful condition, and I donated them all to our Lincoln City Library, and they were very happy to have them. So, but the only, in fact, I'm going to grab this for just a second here, just a second. The only one I saved for myself was Stephen King's The Dead Zone.
That is... I haven't, I'm familiar with Stephen King, of course. I haven't read that one, though.
Well, this is one of his first ones. And let me tell you the story about that.
Yeah.
I had begun to read him, and it was terrifying. It was fascinating, but terrifying. When I heard that he was going to be in Lincoln at the bookstore, this was when nobody knew who he was. He had just been started writing. And I just happened to read it in the newspaper. You know, I love the newspaper. Mm-hmm. And I saw, oh, my God, that's Stephen King. My Stephen King. Because I had read three or four of his books already. And I thought he was just a great writer. Scary writer. You know, really, really frightening. Okay, so I called them up. And I told them who I was. And I said, I'd like to do an interview. I was working with Channel 10, 11 all the time. He was very, very excited about coming. And I had read enough of his books that we had an outstanding interview. I said, Mr. King, it's almost like you believe in ghosts. Do you? He says, of course. Don't you? I said, I'll challenge you, Mr. King. Right across the street from this TV station is a cemetery. I challenge you to spend the night with me in the cemetery, and I will guarantee you there will be no ghosts while I'm there. He said, are you sure? I said, you bet your sweet patootie. He says, you're on. And so we ended the interview. It was an excellent interview, which unfortunately that's not on tape. That was so long ago, and nobody saved it. But anyway, he had his personal servant there with him and said, you can't spend the night with her in the library. You got a plane to catch at 9 o'clock. Oh, he said, oh, I forgot about that. Oh, I'm so sorry, Lita. So what he did... He signed the book to me, Stephen King's, you know, The Dead Zone. He signed it to me and wrote me a lovely, lovely note, lovely letter. So what I did was I thought that was kind of nice. But anyway, so I've run into some very interesting people and had a wonderful life, and I ain't done yet.
Yeah, you seem like you get a kick out of old age.
Well, I mean, I'm still trying to do the stuff that I used to do, and I don't do it as well. See, I'm a big bowler. I bowl on two leagues a week, and I'm on the university faculty staff golf league. And now when we're secluded and when the weather is crappy, you know, and they've closed down the bowling alley, which is breaking my heart, and it's impossible to get on the golf course. You know, every time I call and say I want to do 9 holes in a cart, you know, I did it today again, and they said, well, we can take it 4 o'clock. I said, the sun goes down, you know, by that time. So I haven't done that, you know. So I'm just involved with my Ollie, creating Ollie classes mm-hmm. on Zoom.
Yeah. Well, I'm sorry to hear that about bowling and golf. You've had such a long and varied career, and you are essentially retired, but you're still very active with Ollie and other programming. What is there to do that you want to do that you haven't gotten the chance to do yet?
Oh, see, what haven't I done? I haven't flown to the moon yet.
There's time.
No, you know, if I found something that I felt like I really had to do, I would just go and do it. But it's not like I have longed for something. because I have been so busy. People keep asking me to do things, which is nice, mm-hmm. but I'm never paid.
That's less nice.
Yeah, and so I get satisfaction. Well, like, you know, I still do a television show. Mm-hmm. I create these classes then for seniors. It's always a challenge, so I'm very, very busy because of people call upon me to do lots of things, and I'm happy to oblige, but when I hang up the phone, I say, why did I agree to do that? Nobody's paying me anything. but fortunately, when you get old, you know, you get some money from the government, so that helps.
Sure, sure.
Old age.
I want to ask about a couple of junket guests that you had. The clip that went viral, you're talking to people like Tim Curry and Elliot Gould, who are, I think...
Oh, Tim Curry was really something.
But he and some other guests that you had, I think, were a little bit baffled by how blunt you were. But then there were other people, like when I was watching your interviews this week, like Gregory Peck and Mary Tyler Moore, who really seemed to enjoy talking to you. What was it like interviewing the two of them?
Oh, well, first of all, they're pros.
Yes.
You know, they're good. They know what to do. And I think what happened is, you know, they've got a long day for them. I mean, it's tough for them because they have to go from room to room to room to room all day long. And if you've got somebody who really doesn't know how to interview somebody, which, you know, some younger people say, well, tell us about your life, you know, and they go, oh, God. So I did my homework before. Now, we didn't have the computer to be able to go to so quickly and find stuff. So, you know, I would go to the library. I would work on that particular person I was going to interview to try to find as much as I could about them. So I was ready to, you know, to come in to ask them some decent questions. And I think they were very appreciative of that.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get starstruck?
No.
Yeah.
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I was just trying to think, you know, I think that I'm trying to think of his name right now, if I can remember this.
Well, George Burns, you've spoken about
him. Oh, no, George. Oh, he was so darling.
Yeah.
He, in fact, you know, he was, I think, 98, almost 99.
George Burns came to Nebraska in 1932. He made a return visit in 1981. That means there was 39 years in between. Now, George, I figure if you come back to Nebraska, it'll be the year 2024.
I'm coming back.
I knew he would. I knew he would.
To see it. The first time I played there was when?
1932.
And then the second?
1981 for Arlinga General Hospital.
Well, they must have liked me or they wouldn't have brought me back.
I know. It's too bad it took 39 years to get you back, though. But we'll expect you in 2024.
Okay. I'll be there. I'm not going to die. I don't believe in it. It's been done.
He was so cute, and he sat there with his cigar. You know, and I says, are you going to light that cigar? He says, oh, no, I'm on television. But he'd hold it in his mouth or in his hand. Mm-hmm. He was so cute. And he said that he said, well, I'm going to play Las Vegas on my 100th birthday. And do you know, before he left on that trip, he died.
Oh.
So he was almost 100. But I was so glad I had that. Oh, well, one thing I should mention.
Yes.
Let's see. James Earl Jones. Do you know who he is, the Great White Hope?
Yes.
Oh, we had a fascinating interview.
He asked you on a date, didn't he?
Yeah. How do you know that?
I read your press.
Oh, you did?
Yes.
Well, how about that? Oh.
Have you ever read Chaucer's Canterbury Tales?
When that April
with the shore shorter, the gentle bass of rain hath a perish into the road. The reason I'm bringing it up is, look at his tooth. A gap tooth. Do you remember the wife of Bath had a gap tooth?
Oh.
In other words, a space in between her teeth. It's and Chaucer joke. Said that that was sexy. Well, he wouldn't use the term sexy, but sensuous.
Well,
it is
as unique and as special as the mark on Caesar's forehead, which is simply a vein that stands out when you get angry in your forehead.
Pulsates.
I have both.
He wrote me a little note and thanked me, you know, for a very good interview. And, you know, we've got to get together sometime when you come to New York. I thought, well, okay, bye. But so what that guy did who, you know, found all this stuff was just take one a little shocker. That's not what the interviews were all. But that's okay, because that's what people seem to respond to.
I mean, I think it just really brought people joy, because you seemed like you were having so much fun doing what you do and doing what you did.
Well, I did, because I was able to get out of Lincoln.
So Cartoon Corral was a live show. Is there any remaining footage of the show?
No, it was never recorded.
Yeah.
Nothing was ever recorded or saved. See, and the only reason I had these, you know, my interviews was because I was in New York or Chicago or L.A., where our crew would go there. And I loved it. I loved those people. And they're on my, you know, I've made out my list. The library's at the top of the list, but public television and radio is right behind it in terms of my donating any money that I have saved here.
So. You mentioned Johnny Carson at the beginning of the interview and how generous he was in donating to your alma mater. I'm seeing a parallel between the two of you, just in giving back to your communities.
But I didn't have $44 million that he had to give to the University Theater, but to rebuild that building. You know, I mean, that building was so old and really falling apart. And that's the time Johnny was there. And I followed him, you know, about like 8 or 10 years mm-hmm. after he graduated. I don't know, did I tell you about when I ran into him again?
No, but I have heard the story, and you've mentioned it in other interviews. But go ahead and tell the story.
You know, I was working, I was doing fashion shows. And so I got invited every year to the United States Fashion Association. And I would go to New York or Hollywood or wherever it was, you know, and do interviews. And this time when I knew that Johnny Carson was represented by Hart, Schaffner and Marx. Those were big men's designers and very expensive clothing. And he was their loyal person. In other words, they paid him for promotion. And so he was dressed perfectly. Now, this is a fashion thing, so that the women who are there and the men who are there are dressed to the T's. But since I knew that Johnny was going to be the speaker, I wore my big old go big red and white striped. What do farmers wear? What do we call that
overalls?
Thing? Farmers. Yeah. Well, anyway, it's a bright red shirt, and then here I am dressed like this, where everybody else is very elegant. And somebody from Hart, Schaffner and Marx, I guess the who knew me or had seen me or something, and they said, There's that Lita Powell Drake. She's a troublemaker. Johnny came and says, where is Lita Powell Drake? So I stood up on the chair, and I said, here I am, Johnny. And he said, what kind of a get-up is that? And I said, this is how you used to dress when you were at Lincoln, Nebraska, in the Carson School of Theater and Film. He said, yeah, that's why I left Nebraska. Everybody joked on it.
Lita, thank you so much again, and glad you've stayed healthy, glad your family's healthy, and take care.
Well, thank you so much for calling. I appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.